Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Tuesday morning. I hope everybody is doing well this morning. And it is now time for our monthly interview with Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt. We appreciate him coming on and giving us some of his time. And Mr. Schmidt, good morning. How are you doing today, sir?
Good morning, Kyle. I'm doing great. Thank you. Hello to everybody.
Well, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time today. So we'll go ahead and get started. And most recently, one of the things that you've been involved in, you applauded the signing of the Veterans Treatment Court Coordination Act.
Yeah, this is a piece of federal legislation that the Congress passed and the President signed into law last Saturday. We've been advocating for this now for, I don't know how long, a long while. The issue here, there are what are called specialty courts in different parts of the state. Sometimes you hear about drug courts or mental health courts. Well, there's one type of specialty court that's called a Veterans Treatment Court. And what these are, the name's a little bit misleading on all of these. What these really are these diversion-based programs so that people who run afoul of the law commit generally low or low mid-level offenses. And the real issue, what's really causing the criminal misbehavior, is something else. So in the case of a mental health court, it's mental illness. In the case of a drug court, it's drug addiction. In the case of a veterans court, which are near and dear to my heart, what's going on there is you have an individual who served our country, and as a result of their service, they've come home with some type of, whether it's PTSD or some type of other for lack of a better word, baggage, that results in substance abuse or results in some type of mental issue. And that causes them to misbehave. And my own view on this for some time has been that obviously we wish we had customized, individualized, very supportive justice for everybody who runs afoul of the system. We don't have that. We're not going to anytime soon because it's incredibly expensive. But if we therefore have to set priorities, we ought to put those who have served our country at the front of the line for this sort of specialized intervention and support. That's what a drug court's all about. We have one and only one operating in the state of Kansas. It's in Johnson County, our state's most populous county outside of Kansas City, of course, and it is tremendously successful. The judges, the prosecutors, the social service agencies, the law enforcement agencies, obviously the veteran support organizations have all really invested themselves in this. And if you ever go and observe drug court in operation or talk with the people involved, there are just heartwarming stories, stories of people who have gone abroad, served our country, come home with significant issues that have left them, at least in part, broken. And instead of just locking them up, throwing away the key, adding penalty upon penalty, the whole concept here is that when they misbehave and run afoul of the law, we really come together, intervene, provide them the support services to try to get their lives back together, which is what we ought to owe them anyway. So I'm a big fan, and the problem is these are expensive, and they require specialized technical assistance to get everybody pulling together on the same page. That's why we only have one in Kansas, in the state's largest and, in many ways, most wealthy county. So all of that's by way of saying what Congress and the President have now done is provided some federal help, some federal money, some federal guidance, some federal technical assistance to try to help states like Kansas replicate these successful models to support veterans, not only in bigger counties or wealthier counties, but in other parts of our state. And I'm really hopeful we're going to step up now and make this a reality. It won't happen everywhere, but maybe instead of having it only one county, we can have it in 10 or 15 or 20. And that's certainly better than where we are today.
Very, very true, and it's good to hear that this is as successful as it is, and like you said, it's better than just piling penalty upon penalty for some of those folks who really, that's not going to help them at all.
That's absolutely right, there's a tremendous story the district attorney in Johnson likes to tell about a drug court graduate. This was an individual who served his country. He was in, I believe, Afghanistan. He came home with significant trauma. Substance abuse addiction, mental health issues. He misbehaved terribly. He wound up getting into a firefight with a police officer in Johnson County, and the officer shot him. And as a result of that, he wound up in this drug court diversion program. They addressed his underlying mental health issues. They addressed his underlying PTSD. They addressed his underlying substance abuse. They got him back on his feet. And at his graduation from this drug court, they do have a graduation. At his graduation from this drug court, he stood up and spoke. And the officer who this fellow had tried to kill showed up at his graduation. He had been very supportive, doing the right thing here all along. And this fellow stood up at his graduation and actually thanked that officer for shooting him, because he said, if you hadn't done that, I'd be dead now. I would have stayed on this path and wouldn't have had this intervention. So it's an extreme example, but it's the type of do the right thing approach that just leave you a little misty-eyed.
Absolutely. That is a great story, and thank you for sharing that with us. And that, you're right. That sounds like that's what it is made to do, to help out people. I mean, because, you know, with extreme situations, you know, it's just, again, adding penalty upon penalty doesn't help people. Some people actually just need a little bit of a different kind of help, because not always just massive penalties is going to help, especially in cases like that. Go ahead.
That's certainly true across the board, and it's particularly true for those who have served this country, and we owe them that sort of support, I believe, when they come home.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% there, sir. Also, you've also issued the formal legal opinion for mitigating the spread of COVID-19 in schools, because schools are starting up pretty soon. Some may have already started. I think it just really depended on the school district. But you did issue that formal legal opinion on it.
Yeah, this whole virus response has become, unfortunately politicized, and I don't quite understand why. I mean, the science is what the science is, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that the government just snaps to and sort of immediately orders a one-size-fits-all response and then says we're doing it because the science tells us to. The science says nothing about the structure of the government response. The science tells us about the science, the virology, the epidemiology. And so, the issue here is whether, not as a matter of policy, but as a matter of Kansas law, local governments have the flexibility to adopt mitigation strategies, washing of hands and temperature checks and masking and all those sorts of things in the schools locally that may differ from the statewide order of the governor. And, the clear answer is yes. The law is actually quite clear on that. There are two different ways that's true. There's a statutory provision that allows county commissions to decide, within our county, we're going to allow different approaches in our schools. And then there's the general home rule power of local school boards, which has not been, in our view, displaced. There's nothing in the governor's order or the state statute that displaced that existing authority here with respect to these mitigation issues. So we said that. And I've been a little bit surprised how much wailing and gnashing of teeth there's been in some quarters, but I'll be honest, most of the wailing and gnashing of teeth is in Topeka. The local school districts, counties, and local health officers and parents all around the state are taking this very seriously and are figuring out what the right approach is for their local kids and school districts, and for the most part, I think, doing a very, very good job.
Yeah, they have
a very tough situation.
But yeah, they have. I mean, I've talked to Dr. Craig Carell, who's the superintendent here at Coffeyville Public Schools, and they have a very comprehensive program. One, they're allowing some kids to do school from home. Some are allowed to come back in person. It was, dependent on what the parent wanted. And they have lots of things that they're going to be, checking temperatures at the door and basically deep cleaning if there's ever something that pops up. And it just sounds like they've got a lot of their bases covered. And I think a lot of the school districts have done a great job with that.
Yeah, I think this whole situation underscores that in this virus response, which is going to be long-term and it's widespread, it's every community in Kansas, and it requires us to do things that affect our daily lives, and we're going to be living with this for some time. We don't know how long. We hope, pray not that much longer, but it could be a very long time. We don't know. And when you're in that posture, it really is, at least in my view, so critical that everybody participate in deciding how we're going to move ahead as communities. There's no monopoly on wisdom in the legislature or the governor's office or the State Board of Education. They all have a role to play, or the Attorney General's office. And we all have a role to play, but at the end of the day, this is not our virus response as, a handful of state officials. This is our virus response as Kansans. And it's just, I think the local school boards, school district leadership, local public health officials really are doing a very thoughtful job around the state in figuring out what is smartest and safest and the right balance in their local communities, and that's the way it should be.
Absolutely. They know what's best for their communities other than people from the outside saying, hey, this is what you need to do.
All right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
They can rely on good information, but the ultimate judgment call needs to be made locally.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Schmidt, also, you're seeking the authority to compensate seniors who have become victims of financial fraud.
Yeah, Kyle, you know, you and I have talked several times on your program about the Crime Victims Compensation Program mm-hmm. that we operate for the state of Kansas out of the Attorney General's office. This is the program where people who become victims of violent crime through no fault of their own, they didn't contribute to the problem, and they don't have any other means. They don't have money themselves, they aren't insured, and they have a financial loss. They need mental health counseling because of what's happened to them. They need burial expenses because a loved one was killed by in a violent crime, and they don't have any money to do those things. There's a program they can come to and get some financial assistance, and it's funded not by taxpayers, but by what is essentially a tax on inmates who are in the correctional system, federally and state, and buy things at the commissary or whatever it may be, and also by some fines and fees imposed on inmates at sentencing. So the bad guys pay the cost of supporting the victims. It's a very, very important and good program. What's going on here, the program currently is limited to assisting people who are the victims of violent crimes. And one of our recommendations, which Congress is taking, I think, a very close look at, is allowing the flexibility for states also to permit seniors who are fraud victims and lose their life savings to be eligible for some limited amount of compensation. Obviously, you can't replace everything, but to provide some limited amount of assistance. And I think it's likely to have significant support in Congress. I testified virtually few weeks ago in front of the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee on some COVID-19 consumer protection issues, things we're doing in the states to try to protect people from crooks and con artists and scammers who are taking advantage of the COVID crisis. And one of the questions I got was about this piece of legislation. There seemed to be pretty widespread bipartisan interest. So I'm hopeful. You know, obviously, as we've talked about before, just demographically by the numbers, the number of financial crimes that target seniors are up and are likely to trend up for the next generation, and the number of seniors who fall victim is up and likely to trend up for the next generation. So we're trying to stay on the front edge of this and stay out in front of it as best we can.
And I just hate to see that, because I just don't see how people could do that, because guess what? Those folks, they're going to be old someday themselves and may be in need of help. So I just don't see how people could do that. It just always kind of blows my mind. Also, another thing that you wanted to talk about, that I would like to talk about with you, is there was a Missouri-based company that has been banned from doing door-to-door sales in Kansas now.
Yeah, this happens with some frequency, maybe every 2, 3, 4 weeks. It's not like clockwork. It happens when it happens, but it is fairly common. We do a lot of consumer protection enforcement around the state, and one of the types of consumer scam that we do a lot of enforcement action related to are door-to-door sales. Of course, there are some legitimate door-to-door sellers, but let's just be honest, there are a lot of crooks that make their living by going up and knocking on people's doors and either swindling them, sort of a bait and switch, pay me up front, sign this contract right now, I'll pave your driveway, I'll cut your trees, I'll paint your fence, whatever. And then when it's done, oh, I didn't charge you enough, you owe us more, or whatever it may be, or it's just straight up physical intimidation sometimes. Anyway, we do a lot of that. And the most recent example is what you're referring to. We had a company, company's probably a polite way to put it, but we had a fella with a truck and some tools out of Missouri who was coming into Kansas, so along our eastern border in the sort of the northeast part of the state, and doing exactly this, targeting, for the most part, seniors, go up and knock on the door and offer to trim their trees and pave their driveways. He was a special twofer. And he would say, I'll do it for $1,000. He'd get the work done, and then he'd say, well, it was more than I told you it was going to be. You've got to pay me $1,500 or $2,000, and if you don't do it right now, I'm going to call the police on you. Or he'd sort of, you know, puff up like a rooster, and he was big and strong, and a lot of these folks were a little bit frail, and he would intimidate them into paying, and that's illegal. And so we caught him and taken care of him, and he's now prohibited by court order from doing business in Kansas.
Well, that's good to hear. So again, and I can see how that would happen, that, you know, just basically you're going after those who would easily get afraid of you if you start threatening with the law and acting big and bad. I can see how that would frighten some people, threatening, basically getting arrested, even though you can't do that.
Right, exactly. It was never real, but that doesn't mean it didn't have a real effect on parting people with their money.
Exactly. Well, sir, I appreciate you coming on today. Always lots of great information that you give us. And again, we will talk to you again the same time next month.
I appreciate it, Kyle. And I might just say today is a special day. I don't know if you've been talking about it already this morning, but this is the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, guaranteeing women the right to vote. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I wish everybody a happy anniversary day on that today.
Absolutely. I've been reading quite a bit about it today. So, again, sir, I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. That was Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt. We do need to go ahead and take a break. You're listening to Mighty 690 KGGF.